Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Is here. My wife is in studio. We're going to play Punch It Audio. You want to participate in Punch It Audio?
Sure.
Do you know, Judah, can you tell her the rules of Punch It Audio?
Yeah, Punch It Audio, basically, John plays an audio cut and then he reacts to it in a concise, quick manner. But with you in, it's beautiful.
It's fast,
back and forth.
It's fast moving, though. Fast moving. You don't want to get stuck dwelling. Like, don't get caught watching the paint dry.
Is this where I get to pretend that I don't know how Punch and Audio goes when I gave you the idea for
no,
Punch and Audio you, like a jillion years ago?
Wait,
you're
what?
You're basically saying you invented this?
No! No, but I gave you the idea for it a million years ago. When you've been doing it for a long time. It's one of the few things that has stayed through.
All the husbands listening to this show are going, Canzano, I know you're paying right now. Like, you invented this thing.
Wow, what a great idea. It sounds really fun. We should totally play.
All right. It's fast moving. If you fall behind here.
Okay, I'll try to keep up.
If this is like the Starlight Run and that piece of bread, that guy in the costume that was dressed like a piece of the Franz Bakery bread passes you, I move on.
I don't have a very long attention span, though, so hopefully the clips are short.
I just keep moving. Let's play.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Let's start with Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong. Yellow jersey winner, Tour de France, fraud, PEDs, all of that. On his documentary on ESPN, he had this to say. Said it could be worse. Here's Lance. Punch it.
Hey. Could be worse. I could be Floyd Landis.
What, living in Leadville?
Or waking up a piece of shit every day.
So are you drinking?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I know. I don't think it. I know it.
I just don't have the heart to get into this Lance Armstrong documentary the same way we jumped into the Michael Jordan documentary. I don't know if maybe it was I had Joe Exotic and then the NFL draft, WNBA draft. They were highly entertaining. We're into Money Heist now. But Lance Armstrong trying to humanize himself, I'm kind of over that. He had his chance, didn't he?
I think we're pretty much all over it. I think it's because he just strung us along for so long. Like, America loves a redemption story like no other, right? But I don't know. I find him, we're just over it. He just lied for so long and so many times and so arrogantly that I just have a hard time squaring all that.
Moving on, Jalen Rose.
Already?
On the ESPN talking about the NBA playoff scenarios. Should they expand their playoff field for the 2020 Orlando finish to this NBA season? Here's Jalen Rose. Punch it.
I believe it should just be an expanded playoff. Not invite only the 16 teams. Invite 20 total teams. And then there's your seeding.
No!
Open seeding. Allow teams to play against squads that wouldn't normally play against one another. And we get to a champion different in a unique year. You have to find a way to get some exhibition games in. That's what team 17 through 20 should represent.
The bottom line is the NBA's interested in finishing their season because they have to fulfill their TV contract. They have 44 playoff games that they have to give the ESPN and ABC. I don't like the idea of turning this into a gimmick unless you're going to go full gimmick. Like, if you're going to go full 20-team or 16-team tournament, single elimination, great. But it kind of feels like he just wants to invite some extra teams to not hurt their feelings. And the Blazers would be included in that, and that's great, you know. But the bottom line being, we all know this ends with the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks at the top.
Maybe. I mean, are they trying to recreate, like, the excitement of March Madness, essentially?
Maybe. They just.
So how many does March Madness start with?
60. It used to be 64. Now it's 68.
Okay. And how many NBA teams are there, roughly?
That have a chance to win a playoff game? They're saying they don't want all the NBA teams to be there. So they're talking about either 16 or 20.
Okay. All right. How do you feel about it?
This is where you're gumming up the works.
I'm sorry.
You happen to have an opinion, and then we move on.
Oh, let's move on. I have no opinion.
She has no opinion. All I had to say is, I don't care.
I don't care.
Okay?
How am I doing? How am I doing?
There you go. You're doing great.
I just wanted to say that last point Anna made was really good.
Thanks. Thanks, Judah.
I think we're doing really well.
Thanks.
Mario Cristobal was on this show yesterday. I asked him, is it possible that Oregon could overlook North Dakota State, their season opener? They got Ohio State the next week, right? Here's the Ducks coach punching.
The most important game on our schedule is North Dakota State because it's the next game on our schedule. And before we can fully focus on North Dakota State, we got to focus on us. I guess if I was the type of human being that woke up and rolled out of bed late and took things for granted, maybe you could say something like that. But as sure as the sun's going to rise on this side and set on the other side, that ain't ever going to happen. And thank God for, again, the DNA and the discipline of the old man and the old lady that got me and my brothers butts right, you know?
Sunrise on this side and set on the other side. I kind of think he didn't know which side it rose and set on.
He was intentionally ambiguous there. That was interesting. But I like that. I like his frame of mind. I like how he... I like that. You can't skip over a game. I like that the next game is the most important game.
They have to think like robots, but we don't. Like, we can all jump to Ohio State. We can all go a week ahead. And it's always been a real point of frustration, I think, with coaches and players, because fans and media, everybody's talking about Ohio State, which happens in week two. Nobody's talking about North Dakota State that happens in week one. So we're all focused on week two, and I think that's okay, too. Hmm. He's human nature.
He's like a cross between Phil Jackson and Chuck Norris.
I'll tell him that. I think I'd take it as a compliment.
I don't know. I hope so.
Maybe Mario Cristobal
has a
Chuck Norris tattoo on him, you know? Maybe Chuck Norris has a Mario Cristobal tattoo. Barrett Peary is the head basketball coach at Portland State. He coaches the men's team. I had him on yesterday's show. I asked him, how do we make an impact? How do we make a difference in a world that we now see is rife with racism and troubles? Punching.
One of my players' fathers told me yesterday, he said, you know, coach, all we got to do is just teach one soul at a time, one by one. That's all we can do is just go one by one. And it really set me back because it sounded very simple, but, you know, I don't think we're going to fix 82 people in one swoop. I think we're going to go one by one and try to help people be better. And then we really, really need to be concerned for what's going on. You know, I have a brother.
Barrett Peary talking about a complicated subject. I'm still troubled that Major League Baseball is the only entity that hasn't made a statement. And I kind of feel at this point, if you're MLB, that...
What are they waiting for?
I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and hope that they're going to come out with, like, something that is mind-blowing where they have, like, figured out a program that we can all participate in. And they can say, this is why we didn't issue a statement. The NFL, NBA, everybody else, college athletics, individual coaches, everybody's sort of denounced racism. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball, silent.
Odd. Really odd. Like, you'd hope they're not just, like, sticking their finger in the wind to figure which way the wind is blowing.
Kind of tells you something about... It's, like, symptomatic, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose.
That was you playing it safe. Kurt Warner, former NFL quarterback, talking about comparisons to him and Joe Burrow. as NFL quarterbacks? Punch it.
I mean, I think you're always honored to be compared to any player, especially a guy that's been, you know, successful like Joe was, especially last year. And I understand where they're coming from. You know, I think when you watch Joe play last year, you know, they were a team that loved to get five guys out. They loved to put pressure on the defense. You know, the quarterback was asked to make quick decisions, get the ball out of his hands, be accurate with the football. And those were all things that were my greatest strengths when I played the game. And so I completely understand where the comparisons come from. I don't really know Joe that well, but I go way back with his family because his dad actually was a defensive back coach for us when I played arena football. So I've known the family for a long time. And so I'm just pulling for Joe and hope that he can take what he did last year in college and bottle that up and be able to use that same skill set and the same things that he did really well now in the NFL and has a chance to blossom into to a really good quarterback.
This is one of the dumbest things that I have heard lately.
Okay.
It falls under fake news.
Okay.
It's so forced. Mm. Kurt Warner was undrafted. Joe Burrow was the number one overall pick for the LSU national champion college football team. He's the number one pick in the draft. Kurt Warner went to the Arena Football League. Nobody knew who he was. He had to fight his way into the NFL, come in through the side door. Yes, he threw for 32,000 yards, 208 touchdowns over the course of his career, Super Bowl MVP, two league MVP honors. But for people to compare Kurt Warner to Joe Burrow at this point of their career, that's a reach.
So that's not even like apples to oranges. It's like apples and dragon fruit.
It's like hindsight. Yeah, dragon fruit. I don't like dragon fruit.
I know. How can you not like it?
Not a fan.
I don't like the price of it. But.
But to me, this is like, you could take Kurt Warner at the end of his career and go, oh, he had a sensational career. We think Joe Burrow's going to have a sensational career. But for people to make that comparison, it's asinine. It's just, it's forced. It's bald-faced lie.
And additionally, I mean, don't those guys have enough pressure going into the NFL as it is? I mean, to be compared to someone like Kurt Warner and all of his accomplishments at this stage?
It's what we do.
Do most of those number one draft pick folks make it? Like, you know?
Yeah, it's a real mixed bag.
Is it?
And it's been a not a good, you know, probably not.
Yeah, it's a tough transition for a lot of them.
I mean, I think there's some cases that can be made for players who are picked one overall and two overall, but look, I mean, in recent history, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota go 1-2 in the draft. Neither one of those players is with their original team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a tough position for anybody to be in. And here's the other thing. Joe Burrow's going to play for the Bengals. They haven't been traditionally a powerhouse NFL team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go save that franchise.
Yeah.
That's essentially their say. Dan Patrick asked Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, what does progress look like when it comes to race in our country? It's a great exchange on the Dan Patrick Show. Punch it.
I also worry, though, that we move on so quickly, Kareem, when something happens, and then we're outraged, and then this will go away. This will dissipate. We've seen this before.
And then the next outrage will get everybody excited for a little while, and then they'll forget about it because we've accepted it for so long. It's just the way that we do business, and we can't do it like that anymore. There has to be some type of change. And you know, what it's all about, I think, at this point is we have to find some means to deal with bad cops. You know, bad cops make it bad for good cops. They make it bad for citizens of color, poor people. The bad cops are able to just do what they want in those situations. So, you know, when we get to the point where that's not a problem, I think we will have made a lot of progress.
I agree, and it's one of my frustrations in that I feel like we've been here before a number of times, and I feel like, you know, I can think of times in my life where we have seen this kind of outrage, we have seen this kind of disappointment, frustration, and yet here we are again.
I mean, and the thing is, it's been here all along. It's not like, you know, racism just emerged or that it should have just emerged upon our consciousness. It's been here all along as part of American history. And we're just documenting it better, perhaps. There's video evidence of it. There's, you know, these egregious examples of it. But honestly, like, it's the innate kind of subversive, subtle racism that cumulatively is almost worse.
It's exhausting to when I hear the stories from people who have experienced racism. I'm not black, okay? I'm not a person of color. I'm not a minority. I'm a privileged white male. But when I hear the expression earlier in the show, when I hear listeners and callers who are calling in and sharing their own experience, I am exhausted by it, in the sense that I can't imagine what it's like to live with that daily. I don't know if I put that succinctly, but
no, I get what you're saying. I mean, I think it's why, like, you know, African Americans as a whole living here in America, they suffer long-term health consequences, because if you think of the collective toll of being looked at differently when you go into the store, you know, eyed suspiciously, just like the everyday process of that, that built up stress over time. Yeah, that's going
to
add up.
Not to mention the fact that when you look at just the socioeconomic impact of racism and, you know, wages, fewer wages, fewer opportunities, more stress in your home life because you're trying to make ends meet. And I think that would just grind you down. The fact that you got a police officer behind you, that you got to be afraid that this is it, this is where I could die, that would grind you down.
Yeah.
You know? And I here's the other thing too. Like, I have encountered police officers time and again who I think are good police officers, good law enforcement officers, are there to serve and protect. And I grew up being told by my parents, hey, if you're ever in trouble, find a police officer. If you're ever lost, find a police officer. I know that those discussions are very different in black households in America. And I have heard and talked with parents who say that they have to have harsh conversations with their kids about, hey, you're making this drive. You're driving from Oregon to California. Hey, if you get pulled over, here's what you have to do.
Yeah.
I never had to have anybody have that conversation with me.
Yeah. It's a totally different conversation. And I just can't even imagine it. I really can't. And the part that speaks to me is the fact that, you know, the universal truth in all of this is that when we recognize something is wrong, when you see a video like that we've seen in recent weeks, and it sparks that emotion deep inside you, like in your soul, and you know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
That's the human in all of us. Like, that's our conscience telling us it's not right. And it's not right to stay silent. Sorry. That's not what this segment was going to be, was it? But it's just weighing on me.
I can tell. I can tell, and too, and you know, you grew up different than I grew up,
mm-hmm.
in that you immigrated to this country, and I say, you know, I come out and I say, I don't know what it's like to be a black person in America. I have no idea. You don't either, but I also don't have a clue of what it feels like to be an immigrant to this country who came here non-English speaking, and you got made fun of when you were a kid.
I did, but I don't know that it really compares, because, you know, for a lot of reasons. I mean, certainly, you know, we fell victim to racism in a number of ways. Like, I, just being an immigrant alone, regardless of the, you know, color of our skin, I think my parents were taken advantage of because, like, in business dealings, like, they just didn't know any better. And they got raked over the coals because, hey, look, they're, you know, fresh off the boat or fresh off the plane. Let's pitch them this deal. And they took it, not knowing any better. But it's not quite the same. And I don't know if there are other, you know, Americans of Asian descent that will relate to that. But I won't sit here and say that it's the same. And maybe it's because the stereotypes about Asians are different, right? Like, the stereotypes of Asians are like that they're smart, they're good at math, they're, you know, academically inclined, whatever. But I don't think it's the same. But yeah, I mean, yeah, people called me names and, you know, asked me if, like, I had been left in my mom's stomach for too long because my color was darker, or, you know, why are your eyes so squinty and things like that, that I don't think I fully comprehended as, like, an elementary school kid. But yeah.
I think it's different, but it's the same, if I can say that. I mean, it's that you had a different experience. And I think, too, that, you know, I fashion it like I've told the story before. Like, you know, I've heard my grandfather tell stories of being discriminated against. But I also know that my grandfather, even though he was Italian, he looked white.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he didn't deal with the racism that black people that he grew up with dealt with, like, severely.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm naive, but I kind of felt like the country had moved forward, you know? And yet then we have some stuff like this. And really what I now suspect is that had everybody had access to a cell phone video and the ability to take pictures and film, are we progressing? Like, is this going to keep law enforcement honest? Is this going to keep people honest, the fact that everybody's got a recording device? Because remember, body cameras on police officers were not the norm back in the day. And the Rodney King beating of 1991 only went public because somebody on a balcony took a video of it. It was 15 officers sitting around while they just kicked the crap out of Rodney King.
I hope that at the very least it motivates people to assess their own experience and to assess whatever preconceived notions they may have about the people who live around them and maybe the people who don't live anywhere near them, you know, and the instantaneous judgments and responses they have to people who are different from them. I hope at the very least that, you know, it makes people just be a little more introspective about. And same with myself. I mean, I'm not immune to that, right? Like, just because I'm a person of color, it doesn't mean that, like, I'm immune to making snap judgments about people just based on how they look or sound or, you know, yeah, and that kind of thing.
One of the things that struck me and is I had a hard time with this for the last week or so in, you know, the coronavirus pandemic, I could do that, right? Because I knew that this radio show was never really just about sports. Then all of a sudden we were dealing with race issues in a country that was very frustrated and agitated. And it just seemed like it started with, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, and then it was the woman in the park in Central Park. And then it was Minneapolis and literally us watching the killing of a black man who was already in cuffs, you know, at the hands of police officers in Minneapolis. I mean, it was just like all of a sudden, okay, is this show supposed to be a diversion? Are we supposed to talk about this? And by the way, everybody's going public and saying, hey, I denounce racism. And, you know, my hope is that we're not just doing it to join the chorus, you know, because yeah, I think that's what Kareem is talking about when he says that, hey, we'll just go back, we've done this before.
Right.
Like, we can't just be the chorus. It has to be that we're actually thinking about, all right, how can I really help? What am I doing that may be contributing to the problem? Like, and getting real.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking around and I'm going, okay, you know, am I part of the solution?
Mm-hmm.
And in talking about this, are we being part of the solution? I don't know.
I hope so. I mean, I think your show can be both. I don't think they have to be like mutually exclusive ideas, that you can have this discussion here and provide a forum for people to talk about it and be real about it.
Yeah.
But also, you know, provide a diversion to people from the chaos and the mess and these heavy issues that weigh upon our national conscience.
All right. That's Punch It Audio. It's fast moving. Succinct.
That was not at all. Sorry. I kind of slowed down the pace there, huh?
She invented it, ladies and gentlemen. Doesn't mean she knows how to play it. Leave it here. Hey, Make sure you subscribe to the podcast of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Alabama Adriana works hard on podcasting this show, making sure that the episodes are available and on your mobile device in real time. So subscribe to the podcast. Why wouldn't you? It's free. You can do it. It's one of the things we'd ask nothing of you. Just subscribe and give us some feedback. I guess I am asking something of you. So my wife has joined me in studio, as she does every day in the 2 o'clock hour. And she is here. She is present. You're working on that expert show, huh?
Yep. My little side hustle.
Who's your guest coming up on that expert show?
It is Sam Dermody from Ozark. Yeah. Real name, Kevin Johnson.
Sam Dermody. What is he? He plays the realtor?
Yeah, the realtor guy, yeah.
Do you guys watch Ozark? Judah, Alabama Adriana, you watch Ozark?
Is that Bateman's show?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen like the first two episodes like a while back, but I haven't come back to it. What about you, Adriana?
Exact same.
You guys need to get with it.
How did you not want to continue and just binge it like we did?
I was just having this conversation with my roommate, I think yesterday. He was starting the series. Yeah. And I said about how I felt it was a little bit slow to start, and he was thinking the same thing. So
you got to come in strong to get my attention.
You got to stay with this, guys. Ozark is good. Money Heist is good. Money Heist gets better as it goes. What's the best thing? All right, if you're giving a recommendation, you can only give one recommendation. What show are you telling people to binge watch? Let's take the poll in the room. Anna, you go first.
The Epstein one was pretty good, but have something on the ready that's a little more lighthearted before you go to bed.
You're talking about Filthy Rich.
Filthy Rich, which is the documentary about Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, it's kind of heavy content there.
Yeah.
You need something light afterwards, otherwise you're going to have nightmares.
Yeah, like we have. So we have like this documentary on comedy that we have on hold so that we can watch that for like 7 minutes before we turn off the TV.
I don't have nightmares about Jeffrey Epstein
invading
my sleep. Alabama Adriana, your binge watch recommendation.
Right now, it would be When They See Us. It's also pretty heavy, but it's necessary to watch, I think, especially right now.
That's on Netflix?
Yep.
What's it about?
It's about the Harlem Five, I believe, is what they're called. The guys in the park that were accused of rape that were actually innocent but put to jail. And four out of the five of them were under 18, and they were all tried as adults.
Brutal. Judah Newby, your binge watch.
I'm a pretty plain, simple office guy through and through, and I've cycled through that. That's a boring answer for today's culture, but look, I love that show. I love the writing. I love Steve Carell, all the actors, and so that's what I go back to.
It's a classic. You can go there. Yeah. I'll go Money Heist, and I got to thank Sabrina Ionescu for that. When she came on, I asked her, I said, what do you binge watch? She said Money Heist. We did it right out of the gates. It's a Spanish crime drama. Television series.
Which we didn't even realize.
I didn't realize it was dubbed in English. And I was like, the lips are not matching the words.
We're so dumb.
And then I was like, oh, this is in Spanish. And then I thought, well, there must be an English version. There isn't. But you very quickly forget about the issues with the dubbing.
The syncing, yeah.
And then you kind of focus on, I hate this, because I mentioned this earlier that I liked Money Heist, and then one of the listeners of the show said, I can't stand the professor's fake voice.
Oh, yeah.
And then after he said that, I noticed it.
That's all you hear now?
Yeah, but it's still good. It's still really good. And the idea is a criminal mastermind who goes by the nickname The Professor wants to pull off the biggest heist in recorded history. He's going to rob the Royal Mint of Spain. And to help him carry that out, he recruits 8 people. It's kind of like Ocean's 8.
11, 12, what?
Yeah. And everybody's got a special little technique or talent that contributes to it. So that's why I like it.
You do have to suspend belief in certain aspects, though. Like, okay, my pet peeve about Money Heist and pretty much all entertainment in general is how they always get the portrayal of news wrong.
Yeah.
Especially like TV
news. What do you mean by that?
Like, when they, the fact that like, you, okay, a camera cannot just go live anywhere, like a TV camera, a professional TV yes. camera that's not plugged into anything can't just magically go live. It has to be at least packed into one of those like backpack things now that they use to go live. Mm-hmm. But that's always been one of the things. And when they portray the news reporters, they have them lined up like a foot apart and they're all reporting yes. breathlessly the same thing. And the reality is you would never have reporters standing that close to one another because their microphones would pick one each other up on their live report.
I can't stand the news conference as it's depicted in any movie and TV series, because the news conference, they show the room's packed and everybody asks a question at the same time.
Yeah.
That's not how a news conference works. It's mostly silent. A couple people asking all the questions. Every once in a while, someone asks a different question. And sometimes you get a reporter who doesn't know how to ask a succinct question, asks tell us what they know with the question.
Right.
Coach, I realize that you are 9-1 in your last 10, and that in your career, tell us what you know, tell us what you know, tell us what you know. Can you talk a little about that?
Are there newspaper things, too, that aren't yes. portrayed?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, realistically?
Just sourcing in general.
Yeah.
Just, like, in general, any great reporter, any good reporter, is sourced before the event has to happen. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it is back-channeled. A lot of what I report sometimes in columns is back-channeled. It's me knowing that I can get to Jonathan Smith or Mario Cristobal or somebody in those athletic departments very quickly and get an answer on a question that I don't have to go to a news conference mm-hmm. for. I don't need to go to the news conference. I don't.
It's always curious to me because, like, those productions, all they need to do is ask somebody, you know, who has actually done it yeah. to all help
right.
them.
Leave it right here. You got the BFT on the BFT Radio Network. All right, I thank Alabama Adriana for producing the show. Judah Newby, you've been terrific as always. Anna, thanks for coming in and showing me how to play Punch It Audio.
Oh, no problem.
Terrific.
Here to help.
Make sure that you join the graduation bash. Virtual graduation bash. Alabama Adriana is graduated. Go to AdrianaRocks.com or go to BaldFacedTruth.com and click on Alabama Adriana.
Woohoo! Let's support her as she goes into the next chapter of her life.
Makes it sound like it's like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate everybody who listens.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.